I kind of, you know, got a little cheesy with the sermon title, Treacherous Trails Trust. And again, it's all to do with David's wanderings between the time that he sort of killed Goliath and went to become king at age 30. And sort of a subtitle might be Lessons from the Sophomore Season Jinx. Sort of, you know, in the athletic or the professional leagues, there is this sort of thing that goes on with athletes who, you know, very, very highly rated rookies who go on to their second year the second year is not quite as good as the first year, and they sort of, well, there's questions as, is this guy a real thing or not? One of the ones I think that I remember most, and of course I'm going back here a few decades, in my younger years I was follower of the Montreal Canadiens. So yay, it's Canadiens in the 70s. Yes, yes. They had a great team, just a super-powered team in the 70s. Had a great goaltender in Kenny Dryden. His rookie year comes up and sort of basically wins the Stanley Cup for them. Sort of comes up in the late in the year and he takes them and he goes on to a pretty good career. But one of the ones that came up in that era was a guy named Guy Lafleur, one of my favorites. Yes, okay, we remember him, Guy Lafleur, the Flower, and he had a pretty good year, first year, rookie year, and I think it was early in the 70s. I can't remember. I don't have the stats in front of me. But he had one of those sophomore years that was kind of jinxed, and you know there was this question: is Guy going to be is he going to live up to his rookie acclaims and whatnot? But of course we know he did. He went on, even though he had a bit of a lousy second year. He goes on to on to become a folk hero in terms of sort of the likes of Maurice Richard and a few of the others, the great ones, that Jean Béliveau, that were from that era. And, of course, you go on, like, even this last year with the Canucks, they really sucked. But, Bo Horvat was in his rookie year, and, you know, the guy, he had a pretty good first year. I think scored 15 goals and, got about 30, 35 points. It's pretty good for a rookie. And the first half of the season, the guy could not buy a goal. He was, he was going through this sophomore jinx year, season years. Like he did not have any puck luck. You know, if he didn't have bad luck, he'd have no luck at all. Type of first season. I think he scored 2 goals in the first 39 games. But had a good second half. So we're going to cheer for Bo Horvat. He might be go on. To become maybe the Canucks next captain. Who knows? But the sophomore jinx. Well, David had a sophomore jinx, a sophomore season jinx. And it was one of those things where if when he first comes up, he slays the giant. I mean, how can anybody have a greater rookie year than slaying the giant? Little David with a little slingshot, 5 stones, and kills this huge giant that's probably 3 or 4 times the size of him, and becomes a folk hero earlier on in his career. The guy's just like he's strapping 16, 17-year-old. And, of course, he gets into the favor of King Saul. And in the next couple of years, he starts moving up the ranks. He becomes Saul's harpist, I guess. And apparently he's a good musician, not only an athlete and a warrior, but he's a good musician. The guy's got talent. Well, as time goes on and he goes out into some battles, he's slaying hundreds of people at a time, pretty gruesome time in those days, he starts getting a reputation for himself in his rookie year, and it got so Well, I mean, he went up so fast and so high that a saying started being developed amongst the people in Israel. And it was the saying that says, you know, Saul, King Saul, slays 1,000, his thousands. David slays 10,000s. You know, well, you know, King didn't take too kindly to this. I mean, he, you know, King got a little jealous. You know, Saul's the king. He should be the one who's, you know, has the reputation of slaying tens of thousands, not David. But David's an up-and-coming guy. And Saul gets jealous of him. And again, this is all stuff you can read in 1 Samuel verses or chapters 19 through 31. And you know, Saul's anger, his jealousy gets the best of him. He tries to kill David a couple of times, throwing a spear at, you know, the dinner table. You know, he throws a spear, gets so angry, throws a spear. My mom did that to my older brother one time and threw a fork at him, stuck him right in the head. We're all screaming and yelling like, whoa, my brother's saying, Mom, you're trying to kill me. And she's pretty upset about many. That's a side story. But at the dinner table, Saul's throwing spears at David, trying to kill the guy. Well, finally, David gets the hint. He's got to get out of here, or you know, he is going to be killed. So he gets, you know, he takes off, and so we're going to sort of let's look at 1 Samuel chapter 22. Let's start there with some reading here. 1 Samuel chapter 22 and verses 1 and 2. Now David's, you know, again, David's, from this point on after he leaves, it almost seems like he's, you know, he's going through this sophomore year. He can't buy a goal. He can't win any favors. He goes from trial to trial. He's wandering probably between 5 and 10 years. He's on the run from Saul, trying to escape him. And you know, he can't just sort of hide in one little place. He's got to keep, you know, moving camp and keep wandering and moving from Saul, trying to elude him. Anyways, in chapters 22, 1 Samuel, this is what we read at one of the early parts of his wandering years after he had escaped out of the king's table and the king's camp. David left Gath, and he escaped to the cave of Adullam. When his brothers and his father's household heard about it, they went down to him there. Now you got to understand, you know, David's now in disfavor with the king. Well, if David's gone, then what's King Saul going to do? He's going to pick on the family. It's just what they do in those days and those times, those people. So the brothers and the father and his father, then the household, heard about it. They went down to him there because they were trying to, you know, they know their life is in danger too. They better leave. So they follow David. And also he had a few others that were following him. Now this is quite the list, okay? This is the list of people who's going to be David's army for the next 5 to 10 years. Okay? All those who were in distress. You know, all those guys who are all stressed out in life, you know, they're going to follow David. Those people who are in debt, it says. You know, the people that were in debt. And those who were discontented. Okay? They gathered around him, and he became their leader. About 400 men were with him. All right, now, get the picture, okay? Guys who are in debt, people that are stressed out, the discontented, cranky ones, they're the ones that are following David. It's not, you know, the generals of the army. It's not the, you know, all these great warriors that Saul had in his camp. It's the guys that are in debt. They're discontented. They're distressed, stressed out. All right, so, okay, the analogy. What's analogy? Okay, this is not the team that you want to be on your side. This is not the, you know, this is not even, you know, camps are sporting camps are into A team and the B team. You know, the B team is kind of the lesser of the guys. This is not even the B team, all right? This is not even the farm team. I mean, these guys are the misfits. These guys are the ones, you know, you pick for, when you pick for teams, you know, like, you know, first, second, you know, you go down the line, everybody gets a choice, everybody gets a pick, the captains, and you get the one that's left over that nobody wants. I mean, these are the guys that nobody else wants. And this is going to be David's team for the next, I don't know, 5 to 10 years. Poor David. Poor David. He's not. This is his sophomore jinx, I tell you. Only the losers of Israel ended up becoming his followers in his army. Well, let's turn a little bit further on to chapter 30. And so, this is a few years down the road now. All right, David's been wandering around. And the wandering, I mean, if you can picture the wandering, this is not, you know, wandering in the wildernesses of B.C. These are deserts. There's no trees. These are mountain areas that are just rocks. You know, and he's doing this for 5 to 10 years. This is not the best of situations in growing up. So he's gone from, you know, the king's table to this for five to 10 years. Chapter 30. Okay, verses 1 to 6. Let me read you this little story. If this is, you know, if things weren't bad up to this point, and it gets worse. Towards the end, it gets worse. David and his men reached Ziklag on the third day. Okay, now they had, what did happen before this? I think they had, David and his army went up to try to support the Philistines as they were battling the Israelites, King Saul and whatnot. And so they'd left all their families and belongings, their wives, their children, were left in this little village called Ziklag. And David went up and his men, and they, you know, they offered their help, but the Philistines said, no, this is David, blah, 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 we can't have him, he can't trust him, blah. So they sent him back. So they'd been gone for, you know, who knows, a few days, few weeks, I don't know. So anyways, David and his men, they came back to Ziklag on the third day. Now the Amalekites had raided the Negev, that's sort of the desert area that the Ziklag was a part of, and Ziklag. When they attacked Ziklag and burned it, or they had attacked Ziklag and burned it, and had taken captive the women and all who were in it, both young and old. They killed none of them, but carried them off as they went on their way. When David and his men came to Ziklag, they found it destroyed by fire, and their wives and sons and daughters taken captive. So David and his men wept aloud until they had no strength left to weep. David's two wives had been captured, Ahinoam of Jezreel and Abigail, the widow of Nabal of Carmel. David was greatly distressed because the men were talking of stoning him. Each one was bitter in spirit because of his sons and daughters. Bitter in spirit towards who? Towards David. But David found strength in the Lord his God. So it goes from bad to worse for David. So, you know, he's gone to do what he thinks he should do. He comes back. The camp's gone. The women are gone. The children are gone. They're taken captive. Who knows what has happened to them. And now he's not got 400 men at this point. He's got 600. So he's now 600 men. 600 men. Discontented, in debt, distressed, are now more distressed. And who are they going to take it out on? Who's the boss? Who's the leader? Who else are you going to take it out on? David. Poor David. This guy's just, you know, he's probably thinking of the Lord. What is going on? You know, he knew he was going to be king, and here I've been wandering for several years, and now all of my men are against me. Well, he does, but he finds strength in the Lord, and he goes on and is able to get all the women and children back, and things are all put together, and it starts getting better from there. But this is probably the low point for David. All right, this is the end of the sophomore season jinx for David. So after the crucial lesson then. So it's sort of what can we get from David's this part of David's life? Well, the thing that we get from this is like, you know, again, you know, if you think back some of the stuff that was going on with the Canucks and Bo Horvat, and you know, Sedins are trying to come and encourage him, take him out for coffee, and do this, and people are telling, they're saying Bo, because with Bo it was like they lost their second center. Bo was supposed to be the third center, third line center. Now he's up to moving up, you know, beyond his abilities at that point. And he's not having a very good first half of the season. But the Sedins, they would take him aside and said, look, we had a bad second year. You got some valuable lessons you're going to learn. And I think he's learned them. And I think the lessons that he learned this last year are going to benefit him for the rest of his career. As he goes on, I suspect we'll have a fairly good and substantial career ahead of him. He learned some lessons. So the lesson that David was to learn through, the crucial lesson, the lesson that will take him through the rest of his life and do him in good stead for the rest, for as a leader of the Israelite nation for 40 years, will be this. He learned to find strength in the Lord. That's it. And in fact, if we go back to chapters 23, and I want to read you this, back to chapter 23 again, and we find the same phrase found earlier on. Again, this is the beginning of his wandering years, his sophomore season. We just read a story at the end of the sophomore season and the jinx that he went through. This is at the beginning. Chapters 23, verse 15. While David was at Horesh was a little forest that was sort of south of Jerusalem, sort of a forested area. While David was at Horesh in the desert of Ziph, he learned that Saul had come out to take his life. And Saul's son, Jonathan, went to David at Horesh and help them find strength in God. Now those two sayings, he found strength in God, they are the person that wrote Samuel put them there, put this phrase in purposely at the beginning of his wandering years, his wilderness years, and at the end for a very specific purpose. It's to tell us as we read the stories, this is the crucial truth that David is going to learn through his wilderness years, his wandering years, his sophomore year, is he's going to learn to find strength in God. Now, we could read a few Psalms. Psalms 18, verses 1 and 2, you know, it sort of repeats the same thing. David wrote many, many Psalms through these wandering years, these wilderness years. Psalm 18 was one of them as a result of it. He just talks about God is my strength, he's my rock, he's my deliverer, these sort of stuff. He could write these Psalms because he experienced it. He had learned the lesson. He learned to find strength in God. Now, as David goes on in his career, in his kingly career, we know that there are some very, very difficult issues that he has to deal with. Some are very personal family issues. He's got incest in the family. He's got to deal with that. He's got sons that are rebellious against him, sons that try to usurp his kingdom. He's got some very, very deep personal family issues that he has to deal with. But he's learned in his early years to find strength in God. Some of the issues that he faced were political. Other people were trying to take his kingship. Other people were trying to, you know, go behind the scenes to usurp power and this sort of stuff. So he had some pretty difficult political issues he had to face. Some issues he had to face were of his own doing, his own mistakes. His affair with Bathsheba is his own doing. And he had to learn from that. And as he came out of these times where he is the author of his own destruction, his own disasters, he learned through that to find strength in God. God is his mercy and his compassion. And of course, some were undeserved, blindsided events, circumstances, experiences. You know, he didn't see it coming. You know, as sometime in life, there are things that happen in our lives that we just didn't see it coming. We're blindsided. He found strength in God. He'd found strength in God as a young man in his wilderness years. And it is through that lesson he learns to deal with these undeserved, blindsided events. Well, we want to look at the New Testament, find a New Testament passage to sort of give us a few more lessons about this issue of finding of faith and finding strength in God. So the most extensive passage we have in the New Testament is Hebrews chapter 11 and 12. And we're not going to read them all, but we're going to read just a couple of portions of them. I wanted to look at, he begins with that famous phrase, you know, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. And then he goes on to talk about a few people along the way who had shown faith. There was Abraham, there was Moses, there was Noah, who was the other one? Abel, I think. Enoch was another one. But then he goes, at the end of the chapter, he talks about a few more. Verse 32, chapter 11, verse 32. And I think we're reading down to verse 38. And this is a list of heroes of faith, a wall of faith, if you want. So he says, and what more shall I say? I do not have time to tell about Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, Samuel, the prophets, those who through faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, and gained what was promised, who shut the mouths of lions, quenched the fury of the flames, and escaped the edge of the sword, whose weakness was turned into strength, and who became powerful in battle and routed foreign armies. Now, that's a great list, okay? Now, make no mistake. I mean, that's where faith will lead you, this type of learning to trust in God, learning to strengthen ourselves in God. These are some of the escapades that we can expect along the way. But the list also changes. Verse 35. Women received back their dead, raised to life again. This is where it starts. Others were tortured. This is where faith may lead you also. Others were tortured and refused to be released so that they might gain a better resurrection. Some faced jeers and flogging. Well, still others were chained and put in prison. They were stoned. They were sawed in two. They were put to death by the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, destitute, persecuted, mistreated. The world was not worthy of them. They wandered in deserts, mountains, and caves and holes in the ground. That's where faith may also lead you. Now, we're more, you know, we like to hear the messages of faith, and, you know, we like the first half. You know, we're routing the enemy, we're building kingdoms, and blah, blah, blah. You know, God is good, and great things are happening. Now, that's part of faith. It certainly is. And we need to, you know, claim that. And this morning, as we conclude the service, we will be having some prayer for that. But the other hand, we have to be reminded that faith may lead us down this other path where things aren't so good. We may experience a sophomore season like David experienced and end up in the wilderness and end up, you know, just not nice things happening. So faith does not necessarily guarantee us worldly success. In And so like David in his wilderness years, the lessons we are to learn is to trust God. Find strength in God. Strengthen ourselves in the Lord. To keep going. To keep going on in the journey, even through our difficulties. I had a patient I carried on Friday in back of the ambulance. And it was just we picked her up at VGH, I think. And she was just a frail little woman. I think she's in her in her 60s, mid-60s. And she could you know, hardly walk. She had Parkinson's. We were taking her to Langley. And so it's about an hour drive. So I'm in the back and talking with her. And she's just, you know, she can't talk very well. She's a bit of a whisper. You just couldn't talk much more than a whisper. And her neck was really cricked down because of she's got some muscular atrophy going on that, you know, she just swears muscles are put her neck. And so, you know, we got her on her bed and, you know, just so we so he said, you know, she said something about, oh, you know, I knew I was going to Langley today because, you know, she's been in the hospital at VGH. Her family's in Langley. I knew I was going to Langley today after being, you know, a week or so in at VGH. And so, you know, we sort of piped in, well, that's, you know, that's power of positive thinking, she said. We told her, you know, and she says, no, I prayed. This little old lady, right? You know, this really meek, frail woman. No, I prayed. I was praying. And so, you know, we got her in the back of the ambulance, and we had a great chat with her. I had a great chat with her. And part of the story is that, you know, she developed Parkinson's about 5 years ago, and it's just she's just deteriorating in her mid-60s. And she says, you know, the Lord said, I won't be healed, but I'll have the strength to live through this. And part of her, you know, she has to believe God. She believed God in that hospital room Friday morning. She's going to be moving back to Langley. And she had that faith, right, to be able to say that. And she actually, and she was explaining to me, you know, I'm sort of a timid person, and I don't usually tell people that I pray. But, you know, I told my roommate this morning, I'm praying for you. You know, she's starting to have some boldness. And she told us, two paramedics, two guys, no, it's not my positive. I'm praying. I prayed. You know, she's getting that strength. And so she's learning strength. She may not, you know, be in that category, the first list that we read. She's the one going through some very, very difficult physical times. But she's got a faith about her. She's got a faith that's very rich. And I was just with her for, you know, about an hour. You know, and of course she learned that I you know, I was a pastor, that sort of stuff. And, oh, she was just like, so excited. She got back. She was telling the staff, oh yeah, I had a paramedic, but it was a pastor that brought me back. And don't tell everybody, you know, but she's just, you know, she's got that faith. And that's where faith may take us some days, some seasons. We won't see the resurrections and the, you know, the real powerful healings, but we'll have that faith to get us through, to keep us positive. And she, you know, she sort of left with me, you know, would you pray that, you know, I can just, because sometimes her neck's down like this, she starts choking, she can't breathe, right? She said, just pray that, you know, when I get down, that I'll have, you know, I can trust God to sort of get the air in. I mean, that's where her faith is. So I've been praying for her. So this is part of the lessons of faith. Not guaranteeing us worldly success, but success in God's eyes. And then we go on to chapters 12. I'm not going to read it. Chapters 12, 1 to 13, is that thing where, you know, seeing that I'm surrounded by such a cloud of witnesses, let me persevere. Let me run the race, persevering. Looking to Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. You know, who for the joy set before him, he endured the cross, despising, scorning shame. Despising shame. Wow. That's pretty good. He wasn't going to be, you know, if he was, he would not be shamed. He would be, you know, somebody on Facebook that would shame him or whatever. He wasn't to be shamed. He scorned shame. He despised shame, even on the cross. And then it goes on talking about This is the perspective we are to have with hardships, when we go through hardship, when we're running the race of perseverance. We're to understand that the hardships that we go through is God's training. He's training us. Some translation says discipline. But the idea behind that word is that God is training us through our hardships. And that's the lesson he wants us to learn. That's what we are to learn through our hardship. God is training us. He's training us for some good, positive thing. He's training us to bring some fruit out of our hardships. He's training us like David in the wilderness years to find strength in God, whatever the situations we may find ourselves in. He's training us through our hardships to have faith. And it's because he's a father and he loves us. It's this whole sense of God is a father. And it's because of his love that he's taking us through these hardships. And he's training us and teaching us lessons. Now at the end, there's this little verses 12 and 13. There's this kind of, interesting, obscure little references here. They are from two Old Testament passages. It says in verse 12, therefore, strengthen, you're going through hardships. God is disciplining. He's gone through all that, explained it. Therefore, strengthen your feeble arms and weak knees. Make level paths for your feet so that the lame may not be disabled, but rather healed. We get weary. We get weary in this world. We get weary, as parents. We get weary, raising up our families. We get wearied, financial pressures, jobs sometimes. Life throws stuff at us. We get wearied and we feel like, feeble arms. Weak knees. Our paths are way, just seem to be going like that. And we keep traveling along and it's tiring. Feel maybe a little bit lame along the way. But this little portion after, what he's explained about faith is that we are to find strength in God. Now, inside of this passage, if we were to sort of, dig out a little bit or explore it a little bit, we'd find the notion that we're not alone in this travel. So when it says strengthen your feeble arms and weak knees, it's really, it's telling us who are maybe, we're doing pretty good, and we see our brother and sister who's going through a difficult time. It's a call to you and I to come alongside our brothers who are maybe feel like they've got some feeble arms and weak knees, and we're called to boost them up. It's about the body of Christ. It's about fellowship. It's about the church. It's about praying for one another, and we're going to share communion in a minute or two. And then after that, we're going to have a time. You're just going to have a time. Jordan's going to come bring the team up. We're going to have a time of prayer, and Ann and I believe Jason are going to come, and they'll be here with some anointing oil. And if you find yourself, very much relating to some of the stuff that I've talked about this morning, the scriptures, about be feeling weak and you just need a healing touch for your spirit, your emotions, your mind, or your body, we encourage you to come forward for prayer and to be healed. This is what this is talking about. We pray for one another and there is healing as we encourage. So the bruising, the scrapes, and the injuries that happen to our emotions, minds, and spirits, we can experience and find healing and rest. So like the example of David, our trials teach us to find strength, our strength in God as the most valuable lesson for our spiritual journey. But unlike David, we are given, because David, he was by himself. 600 burly men are out to get him. They're out to, get the leader and let's put somebody else in charge here. He had to find strength. He didn't have a Jonathan there. He had to find strength in himself. So, but unlike David, who's out there in the wilderness alone, having to do it, we've got one another. So avail yourself this morning to the body of Christ. When your arms maybe feel weak, your legs are wobbly, giving out from underneath you, you feel weary, encourage you to come for prayer this morning. So I'm going to ask I've got some servers to come on up. I'm going to ask the worship team to come on up. And we're going to take communion this morning. And right after that, we're going to go into a prayer time and encouraging people to come up for prayer.